Good morning, good morning, good morning, and we welcome you to WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio. My name is Reverend Lee West, and I'm your host here for our Heart for the People Christian Ministry. We want to thank you for joining us here this morning and being a part of the program. Today we have a special guest. Her name is Micaiah Capers, and Micaiah is going to tell us about her son, Brandon. Unfortunately, she has lost a loved one, her child, to the senseless violence that is taking place in our city today of Philadelphia. So, Micaiah, we want to welcome you to the show and thank you for joining us. We know that when you're talking about what has taken place, it is not easy, but we also want you to know that we are here for you, and we applaud your strength thus far. And I understand that as we go forward that you have been to court. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, let's start off with tell me about Brandon. Tell me about your son.
Brandon was my firstborn, my only son. We were very, very, very close. I had Brandon at 14. And I went in on my birthday, had Brandon the day after my birthday. Mm-hmm. So we were both Leos. We were stubborn, but we were so close. Brandon was an athlete. He played youth football for the Roadrunners. He was very silly. He could make a joke out of anything. He was greedy as ever. And we just had a bond that would never be broken. Him and my daughter was 18 years apart. So they were close. He would even bust on her. He called her SpongeBob because when she was younger, she had like two big front teeth. And she would say, "Mom, tell him to stop talking about my teeth." And I told her she has to come up with something to come back. So she would say, when he would call her SpongeBob, she would say, "I don't care. At least I don't have bumps on my face, and your girlfriend's is ugly." So once she said that to him one time, he stopped busting on her. Okay. But everyone loved him. Everyone loved my son, and it showed the day of his funeral. He was loved.
Good. What took place? Tell us about what happened and where it happened at.
Okay. November the 14th, 2016. It started off as any normal day. I worked the 6-2 shift at the prison. And whenever I got off, my first phone call was to him. Mm-hmm. Whenever he didn't answer, I would hang up and call back. And he would always say, "Mom, you crazy. I know you don't even want nothing." And I would say to him, "I don't care that I don't want nothing. When I call you, you answer the first time. All right, Mom. All right, Mom." So this particular day, normal day, I called him at around 2:15, And I had asked him, could he pick my daughter up from basketball practice? And he said to me, Mom, I don't want to come to the Northeast and they take my card because, you know, my license is suspended. And honestly, I got mad and I said, whatever, Brandon, and I hung up on him. But me saying whatever, Brandon, hanging up on him wasn't something that I didn't do often. Mm-hmm. So this particular day, it really hurt because normally when I would hang up, I would talk to him later.
Take your time.
I wouldn't normally talk to him later that day, but this day wasn't like any other day. I got home about 3:15, and the reason I asked him, can he pick my daughter up from practice, is because I sold candy for my daughter. And I had to pick the candy up from the school and fit it in a refrigerator, whereas though I can give it out the next day at work. Mm-hmm. So I got home and I'm trying to put this candy in the refrigerator quick enough to go pick my daughter up. While I'm putting the stuff in the refrigerator in the deep freezer, my cell phone rings. It's weird because when I looked at the number, instead of me answering it, I just kept trying to figure out what number this was, because everyone knows 215-707 is Temple. Everybody knows Temple's numbers start with 707.
Right.
I don't know what made me hesitate to answer it. But it rung maybe 3 times. I answered it, and it's my mom yelling on the other line, Brandon got shot. Come to the hospital. I heard what she was saying, but it wasn't registering. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Brandon got shot. So it took me a second, and in my head, I'm like, he done got shot in the leg, the arm. I'm thinking positive. I'm going to get to the hospital. He's going to tell me how much it hurt. And I'm going to give him a whole spill as to how he needs to stay from the project. I got in the car. I didn't even get a chance to take my uniform off. I got in the car. And as I'm driving, I called one of my coworkers that I'm really close with. And I said, Madison, my mom just called me and told me Brandon got shot. Kate, he's going to be fine. We're going to pray. You're going to get there and he's going to be cool. By the time she said it's going to be cool, I remember I was at the Boulevard in Somerdale at a red light. When she said that, I got a feeling from the bottom of my feet to the top of my head, mm-hmm. like butterflies. And I just bust out and start crying and say, Maddie, it's not going to be okay. Looking back, I wish I would have looked at the time, because I truly believe that's when he passed away. Mm-hmm. I believe the feeling that I got when she said it's going to be fine, I believe that was him passing through me. At that time, I just started running red lights. I got to Temple, and as I'm pulling up, one of his good friends, I seen him getting out the car, and he started running. And when I opened the car door, I just heard, it sounded like hyenas, like making the noise that they make. Mm-hmm. And I heard like, no, and No, that didn't happen. So I started walking, like power walking. When I got to the entrance of the ER, a security guard stopped me. And a girl that I grew up with, she's a nurse at Temple. I didn't even know this, but she said, "That's his mom." So the security guard stepped to the side. And the doctor and another nurse walked up to me. So she introduced herself. She asked me, was I Brandon's mom? And I said, yes. And she said, can you come with me? I said, no. Are you taking me to my son? She said, we'll talk about it when we get in the room. I said, I don't want to go to any other room but the room my son is in. She said, ma'am, please, I just need to talk to you. I said, I don't know if you're not understanding what I'm saying or you're not hearing me.
Right.
I'm not taking another step unless you're taking me directly to my son.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, I guess she didn't know what else to do. By this time, my mom walks up and she's crying and she just kept saying to me, she's gone. I heard what she was saying, but I wasn't listening. I blocked her out.
Right.
So I looked back at the doctor. I said, could you please take me to him? If you take me to him, he's going to tell you in front of me who did this. My mom yelled again, he died. I don't know what happened after that. I don't know if I fainted. I don't know. But I remember ending up in this empty room. I'm looking around, and I said, where's my son? And a nurse bent down and told me, she whispered in my ear and said, he died. So I'm like, that's not possible. That's not possible. He wouldn't do this without me being here.
Mm-hmm.
I got up, I walked out the hospital, and I'm standing in the parking lot of the ER, and it's people on the ground, and I'm just looking at all these people like, is this a joke? Like, I'm still not believing it. So I called one of my friends that I grew up with, who's a cop, that had, like, he knew Brandon. And I said, AC, I said, I need you to come to Temple. They're telling me Brandon got shot and they won't let me see him. I said, I've never asked you for anything. I'm asking you to please come and make them allow me to see him. He said, Mook, I heard it on the radio when they said, you know, the 1900 block of Burke Street, a shooting. He said, but I didn't know it was Bud. He said, I'm on my way. When he got there, I said, AC, I'm begging you. I need to see him. He said, give me a second. He walked away from me and came back out and whispered in my ear. He said, you could go in, but can nobody else go in?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like I was there by myself. It was people there, but it was like a dream, like I'm this dream
right.
by myself. I go in, and it's this tall white guy. Later, I found out this was, I guess, the captain, AC supervisor. So he said to me, I just need you to promise me that you're not, you know, going to touch the body because, you know, of evidence. And
yeah.
I said to him, if that was your son back there, would you be able to make that promise? And he just stepped aside. And I remember walking through one room. It was dark and eerie.
Mm-hmm.
I walked through one room, and then when I got to the next room, it was bright. but they had like a screen around him where I had to walk around the screen
to see him.
When a guy on the other side he was laying on the table with the tube still down his mouth, down his throat, and his eyes was half open. And I just thought, and, you know, why can't you just listen to me? Why can't you go pick up Trinity? And I just kept kissing him and kissing him. And the last thing I said before I walked out was, whoever did this, I'm going to make them pay. I promise you, they're not going to get away with it. And the doctor just walked me out of the room. When I got back to the project, it was so many people at my mom's house, people I grew up with, and people he grew up with. It was like everybody heard before me, it seems like. And people just started whispering. When I got back to the project, they were still out there protesting the scene. I remember walking up to the detective. I introduced myself, and he asked me, did Brandon ever wear baseball caps? I said, my son never wore baseball caps. He said, because we found a hat, a baseball. I said, that wasn't his. I said, I was just told where they came in at. It's a bunch of cameras on a house. I'm going to go check and see if I could see the video. He said, no, no, no. Let me do it my way so that, you know, nothing's messed up. I said, well, I want you to know, if you're not going to put your all into solving my son's case, give it to someone else. I said, because my son will not be another statistic.
Right.
He said, Ms. Capers, I promise you I'm going to put my all into it. I said, because I'm going to be a pain in your ass. I'm just giving you a heads up. He said, I understand, and I don't blame you. After he said that, I still went to the house and knocked on the door. And the guy, I was asking him, you know, can I see his videos? I said, my son just got killed. And they said they came through this way. And he said his video didn't record, or he didn't know how to work it. So I said, okay, well, the cops want to be here to get the video. And when I went back around to my mom's house, I just started knocking on doors, asking, did anybody hear anything? Do anybody know anything? I mean, I just needed information, because everybody in their projects knew my son. Everybody in their projects loved my son. So from that day, my fight started.
Well, you know, I want to, first of all, I need to let you know, and I apologize, you can't curse on the radio.
Okay.
Sorry about that. My heart, I hear the pain, and what's so ironic is your son was murdered a couple months after my daughter in 2016. She was murdered September 1st of 2016. Thank you. And I'm so sorry for your loss, and I definitely hear the pain. I know that recently you went to court, and of course, what was given was not expected. And I know that you are looking for more, and I don't want to talk too much about the case because I do believe you're going to appeal, correct?
Well, I was told there's not much more I could do because it would be considered double jeopardy. So they can never, like, even if someone came to me and said they know for a fact they did it and where the gun is, or give me more information to prove, in fact, they did it, is nothing I could do. They can never be charged with my son's murder again.
Because they've already been charged.
Yes.
Okay. So going to court, first of all, did you feel that you were supported by law enforcement and any legal? Do you feel like they were there for you? I know a lot of times we get cases with parents of murdered children, and a lot of times they feel like nobody really cared. Mm-hmm. I know when I was in court with my daughter, one of the things that I stated to the prosecutor was, my daughter is not a docket number. My daughter is not one of your files. She was a human being, and she was my daughter, and I want her to be treated as such. Some people say they just feel like all alone. They feel like they're victimized over again by law enforcement. So I'm asking, did you feel that they were there for you and really helped you through?
The first detective Jenkins, Omar Jenkins, the original detective that I met at the scene, mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Absolutely, I didn't feel like he was for my son. He never followed up on the information that I gave him about the cameras, but he lied to me and told me he did. Mm-hmm. I gave him names and phone numbers of individuals that had information, whether it was big or small. He lied and told me he followed up on it and never did. Mm-hmm. So about 6 months later, I started calling the homicide unit and I told them I want him off my son's case. So about 7 months after that, I was given another detective, Greg Singleton. And all the information that I gave Jenkins, I gave to Singleton, and an arrest was made. I don't feel like, just to fast forward, mm-hmm. At the trial, I felt like the original DA that was on my son's case, we had a great relationship, like professional relationship. He kept me in the loop of everything, but maybe 3 weeks to a month after my son, when the trial was supposed to start, he left and went to work for the Attorney General's office. So they gave me Anthony Bochy, which was supposed to be head poncho at one time. I felt like they knew things about the detective that they didn't share with me. I feel like they knew how my son's case was going to turn out at the trial before the trial even came. Okay. And let me just make this clear. When my son was murdered, I met so many wonderful people who is in the same situation I'm in. They lost their family members to gun violence. It was never, my fight started all focusing on Brandon, but it became a mission to help others besides Brandon. Even if my case was still unsolved, I made promises to other victims that I'm going to help them as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I started donating billboards to murder victims' family whose case have gone cold, 5+ years cold. It was never just about Brandon. It was about other family members who I know and knew their pain all too well. So my fight continues. No, I didn't get the justice that I felt should have came out of this, not with two individuals ID'ing the shooter 7 different times. But it just makes me want to fight even more to help others where their outcome is not like my outcome.
Right. Well, I want to tell you this. What you are doing is awesome. And I truly appreciate and applaud your efforts. I am in agreement with you because I have found that even after my daughter's murder, the way that I have made it this far is by helping others. to see others get through, because this is a family that we didn't ask to be a part of, but here we are. We are a family. I'm dealing with something right now as we are preparing to wind down. I'm dealing with something right now with my 17-year-old son who has grief, anxiety, depression, which is a mental health issue. He has already talked several times about suicide, and he wants to be with his sister. And I am right now, we're waiting for a phone call. We have found someone to sit down and speak with him. People don't realize the hurt and the pain that carries after the act is committed. You know, once murder is committed, there's no do-overs. There's no coming back.
No.
And the family of the individual, extended family, plus friends, co-workers, whatever the case may be,
suffer.
Yes.
You know,
and in my case, the guy not only killed my daughter, but he killed four other females. So you have families, you know, here that are hurting. Holidays are coming up, and I want you to know that in any time, if you need to reach out to me, if you need to talk to me, please feel free. You have my number. I'm here. So we're going to be closing this segment out, but I want to thank you for being a part of our show today. I want to thank you for sharing, and we are going to have you back again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
And I just want to thank you for coming to court supporting me. I truly want to thank you, because not many came, and that's what's said. Not many came to court, but I want to thank you for coming to show your support.
You're most very welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for joining us today here at WWDB 860 AM Radio. We want to thank Ms. Mykia Capers for sharing her story and being on the show today. She will be back again as we conclude our show here at Heart for the People Christian Ministry. I love you, but remember, God loves you best. God bless.